It is gone! A two-run home run for Rhys Hoskins into the second deck for Bryce Harper. Swing and a miss. He got him. And Aaron Nola leads two. Segura on the run. Reaches up and makes the grab.
Swing and a miss. Struck him out.
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 303. I'm John Stolness from SB Nation's Phillies blog, The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter, at John Stolness. Coming up, we're going to talk about your local baseball team and the series they just wrapped up with the Los Angeles Dodgers. Obviously, a superior opponent came rolling through Philadelphia this week, and we'll talk about at least the first three games of this series. I'm recording this just as they're getting the fourth game underway, but I wanted to get that podcasty goodness out to you rather soon. So we'll talk about the first three games of this series and what we've seen so far between the Phils and Dodgers. Going to talk about the trade deadline and a very interesting piece that Buster Olney wrote for ESPN about the Phillies, the rebuild, the tanking, quote-unquote, that they went through, and whether it was all worth it or not. Fangraph's Devin Fink is going to stop by the program to give us his thoughts on the Phillies and the National League wildcard race. Plus, I will have your stat of the week, and I'll take a couple Patreon mailbag questions that we did not get to in episode number 302. But just a reminder, everybody, to please head on over to the Patreon and become a Patreon member of Hittin' Season. That is where you get some extra bonuses, like getting your email questions asked first on the podcast. Plus, we do have some other content that goes up on that page as a thank you for donating $5 a month to help us do this podcast and keep it rolling, along with Justin Clue and Liz Rocher. All the help you guys give us at the Patreon, it is most appreciated. You can go to patreon.com/hittinseason to join us there. And also, don't forget to subscribe to the main Good Fight podcast feed. Leave a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. Tell your friends about the podcast on Spotify. Listen, I understand talking about the Phillies, listening to a podcast about the Phillies might not be the most exciting thing in the world right now, given the state of the team and how they're playing. But if you like good Phillies talk, this is the place to get it. So as I record this the morning before the Phillies take the field against the Dodgers for the final game of their series, we can talk about the first three games. And what we've seen this week is the Phillies playing a far superior team. And that shouldn't be a big surprise. Everybody knew that coming in. The Dodgers were the better team. The Dodgers are the best team in baseball. Hands down, the Los Angeles Dodgers have more talent on their roster than any team in baseball. And the difference in talent, when you look at all the AAA guys the Phillies currently are running out of the bullpen, when you look at the lineup that they put together in the third game of the series with Brad Miller hitting fifth, Brad Miller should not be hitting fifth for a playoff team. And Gene Segura was out of the lineup, and JT Realmuto was out of the lineup. I get that it was a B-list lineup, but you also had Nick Williams and Adam Haseley in there, who neither of whom is a major league star. Nick Williams is back up to the majors after Jay Bruce had to go on the injured list with a strained hamstring, or not a hamstring, pardon me, with a strained oblique muscle. And so Nick Williams is going to get a chance to play a little bit. But again, you look at the talent level between the Phillies, and their replacement is Nick Williams. The Dodgers have talent oozing from their pores, and they've been healthy. Give the Dodgers, hey, listen, the Dodgers were without Justin Turner for a little while this year, but you know, they've also missed some key players from time to time, but they have the talent and the depth to make up for it, and they are a juggernaut. They're going to the World Series. I know we call the postseason a crapshoot, and I suppose in a five-game series that the wild card winner, whoever it turns out to be this year, could beat the Dodgers in a five-game series. But I have a hard time seeing that because of just how good this freaking baseball team is. So, I mean, there's not a lot of nuts and bolts to get into with this series. The Phillies lost the first game 16-2 in the most embarrassing fashion possible. They came back out the next night and had perhaps their best win of the season. They got up early on Walker Buehler, 6-1. They blew the lead. Hector Neris gives up a three-run homer in the ninth to put the Phillies down 2 runs, 8-6. And then the Phillies rally in the bottom of the ninth. Bryce Harper, after a huge three-run home run earlier in the game, hits the walk-off go-ahead two-run double to send the Phillies on their way. And then in the third game of the series, the offense sleepwalks again. They get just two hits in a loss to the Dodgers. It was, again, they were completely uncompetitive. There's just no forward momentum with this baseball team. There's nothing that makes you think this team is going to go on a run. And so far in the National League, they haven't had to. thankfully, the National League has been kind of a mess, but it's also made decision-making difficult for the Phillies, as we talked about on episode 302 of the podcast. Heading into the games here on Thursday, the Phillies were 49-47, 8.5 back in the National League East. And at this particular moment, they are out of the wild card picture. They are trailing the Milwaukee Brewers by half a game, tied with the Cardinals and Diamondbacks at 2 games over 500. The Cardinals are 48-46. They've played two fewer games than the Diamondbacks and the Phillies, who are both at 49-47. So, yes, are the Phillies in the conversation? They are. But even if they make a wild card and they win the wild card game, they got to play the Dodgers in round number one. And this series has kind of showed me it's a sobering reality facing this team. No matter what they do here, no one is beating the Dodgers in the National League playoffs. Maybe the Braves can give them a series. Maybe the Cubs can give them a series. I don't see it. The Dodgers look unbeatable right now. But we've seen that before. We've seen unbeatable teams. In 1993, the Atlanta Braves were unbeatable. 104 wins, outlasting a Giants team that won 103 games, and the Phillies came rolling in there. 97 wins. It's a 97-win team, a good team the Phillies had that year, and beat the Braves in six games. Yes, anyone can beat anybody. 2011, we remember all too well, in a five-game series. But let's talk about some of the good things from this Dodger series, because there's lots of negatives to talk about. You can talk about the starting rotation. You can talk about the disaster of a game on Monday. You can talk about the lifelessness and the long rain delay that put a monkey wrench into the game on Wednesday. Let's talk about Scott Kingery for a second, who in the first three games of this series has been having one hell of a series, 5-for-11 with two home runs and three RBIs against some very good pitching. Heading into Thursday's game, Kingery is hitting .290. 348, 545 on the season with 13 homers and 16 doubles. He's been worth 1.5 wins above replacement, according to Baseball Reference, playing all over the field. I want to compare those numbers to Ronald Acuna, by the way, the Braves' young star outfielder, who is hitting .287, 3 points below Kingery, has a .370 on base, about 32 points higher than Kingery, but a .501 slugging percentage, which is about 44 points lower than Kingery. You look at, he's a lot of home runs, 23 home runs, but just 12 doubles on the season. Still worth 3.3 WAR because he's an outstanding defensive outfielder. But looking at the two players' OPS plus, Scott Kingery has a 127 OPS plus, Ronald Acuna Jr. 121. Offensively, Scott Kingery has been just a little bit better than Ronald Acuna this year. I'll bet you didn't know that. Let's also talk about Bryce Harper's resurgence, because after fiddling with his stance a little bit, he appears to have unlocked something. He's a little bit more crouched at the plate now. His knees are bent a little bit more. I think his back is a little bit more angled because he's a little bit lower to the plate. He looks a little bit more athletic in his stance. Prior to June 21st, he looked a lot more upright. And since he's changed his stance on June 21st, before that he was hitting .244, .355, .448. Since June 21st, he's hitting .296, which is 50 points higher, with a .418 on-base percentage, which is about 60 points higher, and he's slugging .543, which is almost 100 points higher since his change in his batting stance. And he hit a bomb. That three-run home run he hit the other night was a monster shot, but he seems more comfortable. He's catching up to fastballs now. Whereas he had been missing most of those fastballs early in the season, he now appears to be catching up. So Bryce Harper heating up is a very good thing. They need him to be their superstar. If this team is going to go on a playoff run, they need Bryce Harper to be their superstar. The Phillies are going to need Scott Kingery and Bryce Harper, and Rhys Hoskins is having an outstanding season for the Phillies. You know, we haven't talked much about Rhys Hoskins this year, but he's been their best player, their most consistent hitter. Remember all the conversations we had at the start of the season? Can Rhys Hoskins be more consistent? Can he stop with the ebbs and flows? He has. He's been a very consistent hitter this year, and he deserves a tip of the cap for all of the solid work that he's done, hitting the ball out of the ballpark, getting on base, hitting for a decent average. He's been very consistent at first base. When with Jay Bruce on the IL, they are going to need these three guys at the top in the middle of the lineup to produce. They're going to need JT Realmuto, who has been hitting better recently. They're going to need him to continue hitting, and really, up and down this lineup, they're going to need the bats because the pitching staff, the starters, the relievers, it's a mash unit, or it's a collection of underperforming five-inning starters who cannot pitch deep into ball games, further taxing the bullpen, which brings us to the trade deadline. It's pretty clear this Phillies team needs some help, but And they have been linked to a couple of trade targets. We've heard the Phillies are looking at starting pitching. It doesn't sound as though that they are going to go after a rental like Madison Bumgarner, but there are two names that we've heard linked to the Phillies this week, just tangentially, nothing rock solid, but Robbie Ray and Mike Minor, obviously two young left-handed starters who are under team control through at least next year. Mike Minor's having a phenomenal season with the Rangers. I may have said the Rays earlier. I meant the Rangers, Mike Minor. Robbie Ray with the Diamondbacks. He's a big strikeout arm, something the Phillies do not have in their system, a left-handed strikeout arm. And what I want to talk about here in regards to the trade deadline is we can talk about the Phillies in connection with these kinds of pitchers as much as we want. I just don't think it matters. What do they have to trade to other teams to get these top-flight starting pitchers? Alec Baum and Spencer Howard. That's pretty much it. The rest of this farm system is devoid of tradable pieces for elite talent. You might be able to go get a Tanner Roark with some of the stuff that you have, but unless you're willing to give up Baum or Spencer Howard, you're not getting Mike Minor without Spencer Howard being a part of this deal. And by the way, Mike Minor is 31 years old. So he is signed through 2020, but he's 31. He's not a kid. In a piece for ESPN, I thought Buster Olney said it well, and I've not always agreed with Buster's take on the Phillies. I certainly didn't agree with his characterization of the Phillies' rebuild as a tank job. Seemed like a normal rebuild to me, like a rebuild we'd seen a million other baseball teams do in the past. But we know, and this is what Buster points out in his piece, that the Phillies have modeled themselves after the Chicago Cubs and the Houston Astros, two teams that absolutely tanked, didn't care about wins, tried to get as many high draft picks as possible, get some superstars through the draft, and then supplement them through free agency and through trades. And when you look at what the Phillies have done, specifically with drafts, they have not measured up anywhere close to what the Cubs and the Astros have done. And Keith Law from ESPN participated in Buster's piece talking about the farm system, and he said, "They've also had some development trouble. Hitters haven't been improving on their way up the system. And I think part of that may be their tendency to push players to low A Lakewood before they're physically ready for it. Luis Garcia was a top 100 prospect for me coming into this season, but he's been bad for Lakewood. And I think it's because at 18, he isn't strong enough to face that kind of pitching yet. They did the same with Daniel Brito and well before that with Carlos Tochi." Now, We're gonna get a farm system expert on the podcast for next week, and I think there's a couple different guys that I have on to talk about the Phillies farm system and prospects, and I will be inviting one of them on the podcast next week because I want to talk about this a little bit more in depth. Just didn't have time to make it work for this week, but I am curious about Keith's statement about pushing players to low A Lakewood before they're ready. It makes sense to me. It sounds right. I don't know whether it is or not, but it sounds right. And Keith Law says, on the pitching side, I think they've drafted too conservatively. They've had six starters in the majors this year. One homegrown, which is Aaron Nola, one free agent, Jake Arrieta, and four guys who came over via trades. And then Keith was also on Buster's Baseball Tonight podcast and talked about the struggles they've had with first-round draft picks in recent seasons.
They've whiffed. Absolutely whiffed on a couple of very high-profile first-round picks. Cornelius Randolph, 10th overall, maybe not a big leaguer at all, certainly zero trade value. Mickey Moniak, taken first overall, struggling in Double-A, does not look good, minimal trade value at this point. And they really have not had enough hits later in the draft to make up for that, even though they've had more success with the Scott Kingery's, for example, the second-round pick. They have not found enough value later in the draft.
And he's absolutely right. You look at the Phillies' success with first-round picks, it has been poor. And Keith said poor drafting has obviously not only hurt their product on the field with just one starting pitcher, a homegrown pitcher, and what your homegrown bats are Rhys Hoskins and Scott Kingery, and really that's it. So you're not getting much on the field from your first-round picks. You're also hurting yourself with their efforts to improve the club through trades.
They're also short in terms of trade value. They had one real bullet's worth in terms of a total trade package. They used it to go get JT Realmuto, which is a great use of prospects. But then without that, and with Spencer Howard, who was their number two prospect coming into the season, getting hurt, they're short on trade value to be a prospect depth to be able to go out and make a significant acquisition.
And Keith also noted, and he's right about this, and I had been thinking about writing this for The Good Fight, so I'm a little annoyed that I didn't get this out of me before Keith Law said it, but that the trades the Phillies made during the rebuild, specifically the Cole Hamels trade, the Phillies did not get enough high-impact talent.
They really got nothing for Cole Hamels, or very, very little, I should say, for Cole Hamels, for example. The only place they've gotten a lot of value is on the international free agent market, where they've done great, but that's just not been enough to boost this farm system the way that Houston and Chicago, each of them I had ranked at one point as the top farm system in the game because essentially of the tanking. And the Phillies never got to that level, and it's showing right now on the Major League roster.
And he's right. He's right. Hamels got them Jake Thompson, who flamed out, Nick Williams, who is on the big league club right now but can't stay at the big league level and doesn't seem to be a good match for Major League pitching, at least so far. And he's had plenty of opportunity. I know not this year, but in seasons past, I haven't seen anything from Nick Williams that makes me think impact player. Jorge Alfaro, who I think still has a chance to be a decent catcher. And yes, he helped them land JT Realmuto, but he was certainly not the prime prospect that got traded in that deal. And Jared Eichhoff, who's now a AAA arm at best. And the Ken Giles trade that that Matt Klentak made. The Ken Giles trade got them Vince Velasquez, Mark Appel, and Tom Eshelman. Those were the headliners. That hasn't worked out. We thought Vinny Velo could have turned into an impact starter. Maybe he still turns into an impact relief pitcher, but right now we're seeing a guy who doesn't know what to do with the stuff that he has. Mark Appel is retired. You talk about a first-round pick by the Astros that didn't work out. Well, they were smart enough to dump him on us. And I think, you know, Mark Appel, by all accounts, is a nice guy, and I really wish he had been able to make it work, but it was a terrible second piece. He was the number two guy in that deal. And Tom Eshelman, who I've had on the podcast, a command guy who is now in a different organization, still trying to hang on, doesn't have the stuff to be an impact starter. And the Phillies made some okay trades along the way, but we're not evaluating the Nick Pivetta for Jonathan Papelbon deal right now like we were at the beginning of the season when we all thought Nick Pivetta was going to break out. I think a lot of us have lost our patience for Nick Pivetta. Is he going to be a bullpen guy? If so, well, then that trade doesn't look as great. Zach Eflin for Jimmy Rollins was a good deal. But is Zach Eflin going to be an impact starter in this league? Is he going to be a number three or a number four? Or is he only going to be a number two or number three starter for 2 or 3 months out of every season and then collapse in fatigue for the remainder of the season? Is Eflin a guy you're building around? I don't think so. Well, look at who the Cubs drafted. They drafted Chris Bryant, Javier Baez, Albert Almora, and Kyle Schwarber in the first rounds during their rebuild. Obviously, Bryant and Baez are perennial all-star MVP-type candidates. Almora is a very good role player. Kyle Schwarber has the talent to be an impact player at the plate. Hasn't quite put it all together yet, but he's a big part of that team. And the Astros drafted George Springer, Carlos Correa, and Alex Bregman in the first round during their rebuilds. Those are all MVP-caliber players. The Phillies have Nola, Hoskins, and Kingery. That's okay, but that's it. They have, like Keith said, they have missed on so many of their first-round picks and haven't gotten enough late in order to make up for it. Yes, the international signings have been good, but again, you're really hoping Jalen Ortiz, the $4 million guy that you signed on July 2nd a couple of years ago, can mature into his size and become the player that they were hoping he would be. They really need an impact player from Latin America instead of, you know, Sixto Sanchez was the impact player that got them Realmuto, but, you know, is that enough? That's one guy. I mean, they have a lot of other guys who are kind of helping out in the bullpen and here and there, but impact players. Was the Phillies rebuild, did they do enough during the rebuild for this window of contention? The core of this team is mostly guys brought in from the outside. So once, you know, if they don't re-sign Realmuto, once Segura's gone, once McCutcheon's gone, once Arrieta's gone, how do they build up this starting rotation for next year? Arrieta is probably still in it. Is Nick Pivetta in the rotation again? Do they come back with Zach Eflin again? Do they come back with Vince Velasquez again? None of the AAA guys that they were hoping would be major league depth appear to be good enough. They have no confidence in Eniel De Los Santos. It's clear they don't have any confidence in him. Otherwise, he'd be in the rotation and Velasquez would still be in the bullpen. They don't believe in any of those guys. How do you fix this? And for this year, how do you make yourself better when you simply don't have the trade pieces to go out and get the impact talent? When the only ones that you do have leave you with a farm system that would be among the worst in baseball. And if you want to hold the window open beyond 2020, you can't get rid of all those different guys. I am fearful that at the end of the day, we're going to look at this as a failed rebuild, and we're going to have to revamp on the fly with Bryce Harper. And when you've got a lot of money, maybe you can do that, but you've got to hit on a lot of different things. And as an organization, you need to be able to find diamonds in the rough and not only identify them, polish them up properly so that they're effective for you. And I don't know if the Phillies player development is able to take a guy from some other team's AA or AAA team, see something special in him, work with him, and then make him into a special player. Or take a Jake Arrieta with the Orioles and turn him into something special. I don't know that we have the personnel in place to do that. That's what you're going to need if you're not able to draft. And maybe Alec Baum comes through, but Moniak and Haseley don't appear to be impact players. Maybe Haseley discovers his power and becomes a quality major league player. We'll see. I just read the piece. I heard the Baseball Tonight podcast, and I thought, you know what? These guys are not far off. And I've been critical of only specifically with his take on the Phillies, but I can't disagree with any line of his thinking, and it's a reason to be a little bit concerned, especially at the trade deadline here when this team is in the playoff hunt and could really use some help and does not have the pieces down in the minors to fill the holes that need to be filled and really give this team the impact arm that it needs to make a serious push for the postseason. If the Phillies make the playoffs, it's largely going to be because the internal options either got healthier or got a little bit better. And that's how this team is going to be able to make it to the postseason. And maybe they do when the schedule lightens up after the Dodgers leave town. And we'll see if the Phillies can take advantage of it. Up next, we're going to talk to Devin Fink from Fangraphs about the Phillies, the series with the Dodgers, and the trade deadline, and the National League wildcard situation. That's all up next right here on Hittin' Season. And to talk a little bit more about the Phillies here in 2019, what we've seen since the All-Star break, and looking ahead for the rest of the second half, is Devin Fink, writer for Fangraphs. So you can follow him on Twitter, at Devin Fink. We haven't had Devin on the podcast before. So, Devin, welcome to Hittin' Season. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you?
I'm doing great. And make sure you check out all of Devin's work at Fangraphs. He does terrific stuff there. He's also... knows his Phillies inside and out, so we're gonna dive into this baseball team that just confuses us from day to passing day. It seems like this team either wins on a walk-off or loses crushingly. This Phillies team is if you ever needed proof that there's no such thing as momentum in baseball, I think you have to put the 2019 Phillies at the top of that page, because there really hasn't been any momentum with this team. Unfortunately, you know, I guess all the momentum at the moment has been downward trending. So, yeah, so on Tuesday night, they had a great comeback win against the Dodgers, although it felt like it was going to be yet another crushing loss. So a good job by the offense to bail out Hector Neris. But as we look at 2019 in totality, obviously this team is underperforming. We expected a team that could possibly win 90 games. They're not going to do that now. And so thankfully, the rest of the National League is pretty mediocre. But as you're looking at the 2019 Phillies and what they've done so far, do you place blame on how this team has performed on any one particular person or one particular set of events? If you did have somebody that you think was more to blame than the others, who would that be for where this team is right now?
I think it's hard to put it on one person, but I think the entire pitching staff is definitely to take the blame here. We expected bigger years from Nick Pivetta, from Vince Velasquez. If either one of those two guys had stepped up and been a good third arm in that rotation, you're looking at, you know, a good three pitchers in that rotation. Right now, I'm looking at it, the Phillies have, what, 1.5 decent starters? I mean, yeah. One decent starter in Aaron Nola, and maybe 0.25 in Eflin and Arrieta, maybe give Eflin a half a decent starter. That's unacceptable for a team that wants to contend. But the issue there isn't just say for the rotation. The bullpen's also not been great, and that is partially due to injuries. You shell out all that money to David Robertson for him to pitch just 6 2/3 innings. I mean, he's a guy that you could have had in that spot where Neris was pitching last night and have Neris pitch earlier in the game. Not saying that he's not a good closer, but in reality, he hasn't been great this year either in totality. So I think the whole pitching staff has only been worth 3 WAR this year. That's 28th in the major leagues, worst in the National League. And if you're going to contend for a wild card spot, you can't have pitching this bad.
And while I would agree with that, and they clearly oversold what they thought the starting pitching could do, they obviously thought they were going to, we were all expecting a Nick Pivetta breakout season, and that clearly hasn't happened. Vince Velasquez has been kind of back and forth between the rotation and the bullpen. He's in the rotation now out of sheer necessity because none of the AAA guys that they were hoping to rely on as depth, it's clear they have no confidence in any of those guys, Cole Irvin, Eniel De Los Santos, Ranger Suarez, none of those guys. And so there's obviously a lot of holes on this team right now. And if I'm assessing blame, to me, it's on the offense more than the starting pitching, because I didn't believe much in the starting pitching coming into the season. I did think we would see a breakout Nick Pivetta, but I've never been the biggest Zach Eflin fan, as people listening to this podcast know. I've never been, I thought Vince Velasquez deserved a chance to start the season in the rotation, but he's proven that he doesn't belong. And Arrieta has either been pitching hurt or underperforming the entire time.
Right.
He's been here.
Right.
So, and you never know which is which with him, because you never hear about the injuries until after the underperformance has already taken place. But for me, the offense has been the bigger problem, because you have all of these big name guys that you brought in, and Harper's having a fine season, but it's not the season we were expecting. Real Muto's having a fine season in totality, but offensively, he's miscast as the team's number 5 hitter. And you look at Segura, he's been up and down. McCutchen, losing him to this, to an injury for the season has been devastating to this team. To me, the offense takes on a lot more of the blame than the starting pitching, because I expected more from them. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's all in expectations versus performance outlook, right?
Yeah.
Offense hasn't been horrific, but it's been about National League average. I mean, I'm looking at it now. They're like 6th in the National League in weighted runs created plus, and they're very high up in walk rate, which is what we expected to see. That's good. They're actually 9th in weighted runs created plus. So I mean, it's really just a question of like, are you looking at what you expected versus how they performed, or are you looking at just pure performance? Because the offense has been the position players have been decent, in terms of total performance. They're 6th in the NL in WAR when you add in defense. Muto's been phenomenal behind the plate. He's really made strides there. Harper's been excellent defensively. He's actually had his best defensive season of his career so far. So in totality, I think when you look at the position players, they've been okay. Falls well short of your expectations, as you said, which, again, deserves some blame there. But in terms of sheer performance, I mean, this pitching staff has just been horrific. I mean, even Aaron Nola has taken a step back, and maybe some of that's natural regression, but he's still been good, and he's been really good as of late. But
yeah,
when he's your only reliable pitcher on a pitching staff of like 13 guys, I mean, that's, to me, really concerning, but I can definitely see it both ways.
No, fair enough. That's a fair point, and I think that is the context. You're right, expectations versus what you've actually gotten. So with all of these holes, with all these different things we're talking about, the fact the team has one starting pitcher, the fact that they have lost the 4 veteran relievers that they've signed the last 2 off seasons, all are injured and not pitching right now, and most of the young guys they were relying on are either hurt or underperforming. There's a lot of holes on this team, and we've got a trade deadline coming up in 2 weeks where there's just too many holes to patch up in one trade deadline. And so if they're going to do something,
right,
they've got to make the most of what it is they're going to do. If you were Matt Klentak, how active would you be? I mean, would you consider moving one of the top prospects that they have, Alec Baum, Spencer Howard, for a Marcus Stroman or a Matthew Boyd, or would you go after Bumgarner? And given where the Phillies are in the wild card, maybe Bumgarner is enough to get you that second wild card. Is that enough to make a move like that? Where
right,
are you on the Phillies at the trade deadline right now?
I think Klentak put himself in a pretty tough spot. I think I look at it through the perspective of they traded for JT Realmuto, and he has 2 years left on his current deal. I know he said that he's open to signing an extension, but after next season, as of today, he's a free agent. And so do you play thinking that you were expecting to make the postseason both this year and next year with Realmuto, who's clearly one of your core pieces, who's your only all-star this year, he's been excellent behind the plate. His hitting hasn't been great, but he's been a very mainstay in that Phillies lineup, and he's been good overall. He's been your best position player by WAR. Do you look at this season and next season thinking that maybe – and he knows better than I do, but if you – as of today, he's going to be a free agent at the end of next season. So are you still playing for that, or are you playing for something more longer term? And that's the question he's going to have to answer. A guy I personally like who has not been great this year, who would be extremely buying low, but Aaron Sanchez is a guy that I think could use a change of scenery to recapture some of that magic he had in 2016. He had a 3 ERA that year. His FIP was good. Posted almost 4 WAR out of the starting rotation. But that was a good 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And in the time since, he's been horrible. But I think you need to make lower risk moves like that, as opposed to blowing out the farm system for someone like Bumgarner, because at this point you can't justify going all out and getting a guy like Bumgarner or even someone that's gonna be in hot pursuit like Marcus Stroman or even Mike Minor. These guys, or Matthew Boyd, these are guys that a lot of teams are going to want, and with the position that the Phillies are in right now, it might not be worth the risk of blowing out the farm to get one of these guys, especially when there's so many more holes, and a second starting pitcher probably doesn't even fix your rotation.
No, and I'm all for them going out and getting somebody like you just mentioned, Aaron Sanchez or Tanner Roark or something like that. I mean, Tanner Roark probably doesn't cost you much, but what you brought up is interesting in Aaron Sanchez, who would be kind of a rebuilding project, from not for a rebuilding team, but to rebuild Aaron Sanchez, because he was very good, and he's not an old pitcher at this point in his career, but he has lost something. And, I had mentioned on the last podcast that what the Phillies have really struggled to do is find those diamonds in the rough, to find those reclamation projects and make them work, like the Astros did with Charlie Morton, like the Cubs did with Arrieta a few years ago.
How much credit can the Phillies take for the Charlie Morton reclamation?
Well, you'd like to think that they were ahead of the curve. We just didn't see enough of Charlie that season after 4 starts to know whether or not we were going to get that guy, but it looked like we were. Yeah, he certainly looked good before he went out with that hamstring injury. So you could argue that Klintak was ahead of the curve on Charlie Morton, and maybe he was. And I think one of Klintak's first trades was the Jeremy Hellickson trade, and we can joke about Jeremy Hellickson, but for a year and a half, the first year and a half he was here, Hellickson was very effective, and that was a good low cost move that helped the Phillies win some ball games. And so Aaron Sanchez is kind of that guy. I just wonder if the Phillies have the ability to find that guy and then diagnose the problems and implement the changes, because they haven't been able to do it with Pivetta. They haven't been able to do it with Velasquez, two guys with great stuff who they have not been able to get these two guys to harness their stuff well enough to be good major league pitchers.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely something that they're going to have to consider. But I think if I'm in their front office, I still have trust in the guys that are there. And I'm not sure that I'm going to go out and get a guy like Bumgarner or even the Matthew Boyd or Marcus Stroman when it only might come down to one game playoff that I'd be starting Arodola in anyway.
Right.
And at that point, I mean, the addition of the second wild card, I think it's good for baseball. It adds more teams into the pennant race. It makes for an interesting second half. But with the one trade deadline, it makes things complicated.
It does.
It makes things complicated because the risk versus reward is – the risk is a lot higher at this point because the Phillies are kind of in this middle ground right now between truly contending and they're still kind of breaking out of that rebuild. I don't think you want to blow out the farm just yet, because no matter what moves you make, even if you do win the wild card game, you got a date with the Dodgers. And at this point, with the team that's currently constructed, they could win – one of those games maybe, but I mean, it's hard to think that they could beat the Dodgers in the NLDS. And that's something that I think is definitely being talked about in the front office when they're discussing their trade deadline strategy.
And I thought that too previously, and I think that's a great point, is when you're talking about how aggressive the Phillies should be here at the trade deadline, just know that you're going to have to face the Dodgers. And I don't see any way the Dodgers don't make the World Series. Obviously, the playoffs are a crapshoot. The Phillies won 102 games in 2011 and didn't get out of the first round of the playoffs, lost to a team that wasn't able to win 90. But the Dodgers look like the best team we've seen in the National League in a number of years. And, you know, what are the realistic possibilities that the Phillies are actually able to do anything in the postseason, even if they do go out and get a couple of guys? But that brings me to the wild card race in the National League, Devin. And the Phillies are not alone in their struggles right now. Despite everything, they hold the second wild card spot as we record this on July 17th. And it seems inconceivable to me because they're only a handful of games, three games over 500, whether it's two, three, or four games over 500. They're still right around that mark, but so much of the rest of the National League is too. And so many of these National League teams also don't really know whether they're buyers or sellers. I mean, I look at a team like the Diamondbacks with a run differential that's among the highest in the league playing 500 ball. That's a team I think could go on a run here. You look at the Cincinnati Reds, who have, I think, the third best run differential in the National League, third or fourth best. They're even further out of it than the Phillies are. So who's a buyer? Who's a seller? This National League wildcard race, right now, if you had to handicap it, who are the two teams that win the wildcards right now?
I think Washington is a pretty safe bet for the first wildcard.
Yep.
At this point, it looks like it's going to be tough for them to catch the Braves. The Braves are playing well. And I think the Nationals probably still have the second or third most talented roster in the National League. They're finally playing like it. So I think they're pretty safe bet at this point to say that they're going to win the first wild card. And as you said, for the second wild card, it's really anyone's game. I think the Brewers still have a talented team. I like the Diamondbacks pick just because of the run differential. And at this point, you look at those run differentials and you see, you know, the Diamondbacks are only a couple games back of the Phillies, and the Phillies are definitely a lot worse on paper this season. So I would say I would agree with you and go with the Diamondbacks or even the Reds as the team that would sneak in there. But based on how they're currently playing, the Diamondbacks, just because they have a better record and it's probably just an easier path at this point.
Yeah, and even if you look at more than just the run differential, I was looking at their offensive numbers. They're in the top half in both offense, starting pitching, and relief pitching. Every other National League wildcard team has a serious hole in one of those areas. The Rockies' starting rotation is the worst in baseball ERA-wise. The Phillies have the worst FIP among relievers and starters in Major League Baseball. The Brewers have a terrible starting rotation. The Cardinals' big problem is offense. They have among the worst offenses in baseball. The Diamondbacks have, you know, Zach Greinke, Robbie Ray at the top of their rotation, some good arms in the bullpen, and an offense when they came through Philadelphia, I couldn't find an out in that entire lineup. I mean, I don't know why the Diamondbacks are talking about trading Robbie Ray at this point. And people talk about the Phillies getting Zach Greinke. If I'm the Diamondbacks, I'm not selling anything. They look like a team that could absolutely take a wild card spot just by hanging on. They don't even have to buy, I don't think. They could just wait to trade Zach Greinke in the offseason.
And kind of let things play out.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's what doesn't make any sense to me. So, I recently wrote a piece for The Good Fight about what the Phillies could do to fix things here, because there's a lot of people calling for the Phillies to fire the hitting coach or fire the pitching coach, the manager, the GM, the team president. I mean, everybody, when a team loses like this, people want heads to roll. But my solution was to bring in someone from the outside, from an organization that has had a lot of success integrating analytics and being successful with melding some old school baseball with new school baseball, and that's the Yankees. And Joe Girardi is out there. And I'm not talking about bringing in Joe Girardi as a replacement for Gabe Kapler as manager, although if that happens at some point, you know, I could see it. But bringing him in as a fixer, to come in and diagnose the issues with this team, and maybe having someone from the outside come in and say, you know, here's where I think your coaching staff is falling short. Maybe we need to make a change here. Here's, you guys are using analytics. You know, the stuff you're using is fine, but here's how you're implementing it wrong. Or you're not using the right stuff. The stuff you're using is too basic. You're not asking the right questions as far as what is it we should be looking for. We're not looking at the right weaknesses of our opponents as they're coming into play. What are your thoughts on Joe Girardi, him being a free agent out there as either a manager or somebody to come in and help the front office?
Definitely seems like a lot of work for one guy, but yeah, I agree. I think it's a good idea. It's a novel idea, bringing in someone to kind of just look at the state of the team and evaluate what's working, what isn't. because I still think there is good to be had there. I know the Phillies hired a guy out of Driveline to work with their hitting, and I've been surprised by some of the results as a result of that, and I wonder how much voice he has on the team. And I don't know if they're listening to the and it's really hard for me as an outsider. It's really hard for anyone as an outsider to understand where things have gone wrong.
Right.
Some of it could probably attributed to luck, too. No one expected Andrew McCutchen to go down with a season-ending game. And had he been in the lineup for the last 4 or 5 weeks, are we not even asking these questions? The Phillies have looked completely overmatched at certain points, and you can't just attribute that to luck. I mean, when they didn't know that a third out was made on what was that, Monday night?
Yeah.
I mean, that's just a lack of focus that needs to be addressed somewhere. So I like the idea. I think it's a novel idea, bringing in someone who's had experience, who understands what makes a ball club win and makes them, you know, focused and everything. And it's a good idea. I think it's a good idea. It can't possibly hurt to have another experienced voice in there. And we'll have to see. It's hard to be critical without knowing all the information, which, again, from an outsider's perspective, it's hard to know. Mm-hmm. Regardless. But yeah, I don't think it would hurt at all.
Yeah, that's why I'm not quick to say fire the manager, fire the coaches, fire all these guys, because from the outside, I don't know what they're doing. So that's why I think they need to bring an expert in from outside the organization with a different perspective and get eyes on. And if it's not Joe Girardi, you know, get somebody from the Tampa Bay Rays who seem to just know how to do this, you know. Somebody, you know, but back when the Cardinals were having all their success, I had a little hashtag, hire all the Cardinals. You know, get as many thinkers from that organization into this one as you can. Well, now I think you have to. The Phillies have tried to go after, you know, they've used the Astros and the Cubs as their models, but I don't know if they're implementing the material that they use as well as those teams. As a matter of fact, I'm pretty sure they aren't. And so I think they need some fresh blood to come in and just evaluate everything. But folks, make sure if you're not following Devin Fink on Twitter, that you do that as soon as you're done listening to this podcast at Devin Fink, and check out his stuff for Fangraphs. Devin, thanks so much for coming on Hittin' Season. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on. This was a lot of fun.
Well, up next, we'll take just a couple questions, the remaining questions from the Patreon mailbag that we did not get answered on episode number 302. And we'll have your stat of the week. That's all up next right here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. So a couple quick questions from the Patreon mailbag. Patrick asks, is Philadelphia a baseball city? I think most people would say it's a football city, but when the Phillies signed Bryce Harper, the Eagles were in the middle of a very productive offseason, and the Sixers had arguably the best starting five in the league, and all people wanted to talk about were the Phillies. Now that the Phillies have fallen flat on their faces, no one is talking about the exciting potential for the upcoming basketball and football seasons. Does this mean Philadelphia is secretly a baseball city? I think the city is a football city first and foremost. And frankly, I think the Sixers have moved ahead of the Phillies, but I think they want to be a baseball city. I think it helps that the Phillies play on WIP, the top sports station in the city, and so hosts talk about the Phillies. But the Phillies have been interesting. Sometimes a bad baseball team is a more interesting baseball team. There are personalities like Gabe Kapler and Bryce Harper, and there are some things going on that make this an intriguing baseball team. This team came in with expectations, and they're not meeting them, and that always gets people's cackles up. So there is some of that. But no, I don't think that makes Philadelphia a baseball city. I certainly think that Philadelphia is a football city first and foremost, and there really is. This is the dead time in football. I mean, it is. Once training camp opens, if the Phillies are still playing like this, it's going to be all Eagles all the time. People are going to be so done talking about the Phillies, and that's why it's a real shame. I think they've wasted a golden opportunity here to take over the city while we are in the dead period of the NBA and NFL seasons, and the Phillies are simply, they're getting a lot of attention. It's just most of it is not good right now. Joe Camerata asks, almost 4 years into the McPhail-Klentak era, the organization appears to be headed nowhere. The Major League team continues to underperform, heading toward an eighth consecutive year without a winning record. That remains to be seen. They're still over 500. And the farm system suffers from poor drafting and lack of player development. How much longer will Middleton give Klentak before making a change? Well, it's interesting that according to Matt Gelb from The Athletic, McPhail signed a 3-year extension back in 2017 that runs through the 2021 season. Klentak was extended through the 2022 campaign 4 months ago, just after signing Bryce Harper. So it doesn't appear as though either one of these guys is going anywhere for a while. Certainly Middleton can change course, but that means eating a lot of money, and throwing the organization into upheaval. And that's the thing. You've got this Phillies machine right now where it's kind of hard to pull one person out and keep the machine going. I don't know. I don't think Klentak is going to get the rug pulled out from under him this offseason. I don't think McPhail is going anywhere. I think Middleton, if they're going to make changes, it would be to the on-field staff. But I'll tell you, Matt Klentak gets one managerial change, I think. And if they do decide to move on from Gabe Kapler, that's probably the only one he gets, because he is tied closely to Gabe Kapler. And maybe, you know, Middleton does not strike me as a guy who overreacts. He seems to be a patient guy. He kind of lays low during the regular season. You don't hear him talking a whole lot. He's not George Steinbrenner. I don't think he wants to fire people. But I think if he sees an improvement, if he sees an obvious improvement out there, he'll go for it. But at this point, yes, the Phillies are not performing up to expectations, but given the contract extensions these guys have signed, I don't think Klentak or McPhail are going anywhere, at least until after next season, if there's yet another disappointing season. You can't burn through too many of Bryce Harper's prime seasons here and expect to keep your job. That's the bottom line. You paid Bryce Harper $330 million so that you have him during his prime and so that you can be a postseason contender. You can't burn through too many of these seasons and expect to get away with it. So we missed those two. On the previous podcast. I wanted to make sure we got them in, and we'll do another mailbag coming up here in just a few weeks as well. All right, here's our stat of the week, and this was according to the Phillies game notes that came out before the game on Wednesday night. After he hit a walk-off hit, hit the three-run home run, and then had the walk-off two-run double, Bryce Harper had the highest win probability added WPA of any Philly in a game since Pat Burrell on May 2nd, 2008. And what win probability added means is that at any point during a game, there's a calculation that goes on that determines what is your probability for winning this game. And so Bryce Harper's three-run home run gave the Phillies a five-run lead early. That obviously increased their odds of winning dramatically. And then in the bottom of the ninth inning, when he came to the plate, the Phillies were obviously still favored to lose that game when you look at the odds. And his win obviously put them to 100%, a dramatic shift upwards. WPA is kind of an indication of how many clutch hits you've gotten that year, how many runs you've driven in, how many things you've done in order to help give your team the lead or extend the lead or come back or something like that. Wins probability added. It's not a predictive stat. It's kind of an interesting stat looking back on just to see what a player has done that season as far as coming through in the clutch. Generally, these numbers are not consistent year to year. But Bryce Harper this year, when you look at his numbers with runners in scoring position and runners on base and with WPA, has been probably the Phillies' most clutch hitter here in 2019. And folks, that'll do it for this edition of Hit and Season. My thanks to Devin Fink for coming on the podcast. Again, if you haven't yet, please make sure to get on over to the Patreon page. It's patreon.com/hittinseason and subscribe, be a $5 a month member, and subscribe to the main Good Fight podcast feed by going to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever it is you get your podcasts, and you want that Phillies goodness coming to your phone each and every week. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to y'all next time right here on Hittin' Season.